Two films seem to have provided the impetus for productions to become more and more explicit. The first was Night of the Living Dead in 1968, and the second was the 1974 release of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Each was made for less than $200,000, and they reportedly have grossed more than $50 million apiece. The phenomenal financial success of Texas Chainsaw Massacre in particular led to a glut of Hollywood filmmakers, including several pornographers, moving into the horror field.
And they'd taken that same formula, and instead of those explicit sex shots, they substitute women being killed and murdered by men.
And stories of members of organized crime wanting in on the action have also surfaced. In fact, Texas Chainsaw Massacre was distributed by a company headed by Louis Pereno. Not only was Pereno the producer and distributor of the porn hit Deep Throat, he is also considered by police to be an operative of the Joseph Colombo Mafia family. Texas Chainsaw Massacre and its sequel, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, are still two of the biggest hits in the video rental market. It is the explosion of that video rental market that fuels the modern horror films.
So there are two loose heads just floating around in here somewhere?
You can hear them at night. They whisper to each other and then cry.
Since our host isn't here, would anyone care to mix me a drink?
Horror films ask us many questions. Who will survive and what will be left of them? Who's going to believe a talking head? What's blood for if not for shedding? Do you like scary movies? Have you checked the children? Maybe we'll find the answers together. Thank you for joining us on Photo Flow, Terror in the Smiles. Here are your hosts, Eric Jones and Jake Almond.
Good evening. I'm your host.
The next film is a movie that is another one of those movies that some people refuse to even watch because its reputation kind of preceded it. And I do think that I think once again, it's the editing of the film, but I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre is both less graphic than most people think and also more graphic than even some of the people, horror fans think. Because every time I watch it, I forget there are actually moments that are pretty graphic in the film.
You're not getting moments of flat out gore. But yes, there are moments that I watched it this morning, and like just you know scenes like when we first see Leatherface and Kirk goes in the house and he bashes his head in with the hammer. The sound of the hammer hitting him, it feels so heavy. You don't see the actual hammer like crushing his skull, but you feel it.
But you do see the blood on his face. And then you see his body having a seizure or whatever. And because he had brain damage, you know, at that point. So
yeah, and so like that's one of the moments that kind of stands out for you. Or when Pam goes in after him and Leatherface grabs her and hangs her on the meat hook. Another film with meat hooks. you cringe because it's like you feel it. You don't actually see like the hook going into her skin, but just the way it's filmed,
it's shot and edited in a way
at the end, you feel that chainsaw on Leatherface's leg. You can't help but like lift your own leg up when you see it.
That's one of the the only time you actually see the blade cut the skin too.
Yeah,
but in a Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, I think that. But well, we talked about Psycho a couple weeks ago about how graphic that shower scene feels, even though you don't see the knife blade plunge into the skin. I think that Hooper uses very similar edits in a couple scenes in Chainsaw to give that same illusion of it feeling even more graphic. And I think that Franklin's death is one of those, if you're just talking about, and you have to start Chainsaw out talking about the graphic nature of it, because that's really what people remember. They either remember it or heard about it being way more violent than it is, or that's just what they remember from watching it that one time in the 70s and swearing they'd never watch this movie again. But I think so much of that movie's...
I sought it out because of that. I had saw the remake that came out in 2003. I had saw that, the remake. I do enjoy
the remake. So you saw the remake. Yeah, I think you said that before. I saw the remake first.
Yeah. And I enjoyed that. And of course, me, obviously, because I love film, I do want to seek out the original. But I sought out the original because of the reputation. And I'm like, okay, this remake was in line with what horror movies were, slashers were at that time.
I like it. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I liked the remake, and I had seen the original and actually liked the original and owned it on DVD and had watched it multiple times before the remake ever even came out. So yeah. I liked the 2003 Chainsaw Massacre. I haven't seen a lot of the other sequels. Like I didn't actually see the prequel, which is the only direct connect to the remake. I didn't see that.
I saw that in theaters. That was the only, because I saw I rented the remake from like Blockbuster. The prequel to the remake was the only Texas Chainsaw film I saw in theaters. And the only other, I did see the new one that was released on Netflix a couple weeks ago, but the only other one I saw was Tobe Hooper's Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. I haven't seen any of the other. Oh, no, I'm sorry. There was one. It was just called Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Yeah.
I did see that
one. That was supposed to be a sequel to the original, right?
Yes, that one actually has Marilyn Burns back as Sally.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yep.
In your opinion, without going into detail about either film, which direct sequel to the original Texas Chainsaw do you recommend? 3D.
It's been a while since I saw Texas Chainsaw, but I will probably still give that one a little credit over the new one on Netflix. I didn't think, without spoiling, I didn't like that what the new one did with Sally. And it's a little, it has some messages, which isn't a problem. We just talked about Night of the Living Dead and its messages. The problem is with the new one on Netflix, I just thought that it didn't balance its messaging well. Right. There's some
cool kills, messages though. Are fine, but if it just comes across ham-fisted with somebody who doesn't really have
it was a little ham-fisted, but it wasn't but it wasn't even executed all that well. It was making a point about one thing, but in a way it made the other side, it was trying to make the other side, I think, look better, but the other side, as you see it in the movie, isn't really better. So right. It makes nobody look good.
So unless the movie just they just didn't have the range for that.
Unless it was trying to be nihilistic. Exactly. More like that. Unless it was just trying to be nihilistic, but I don't think it was. Like right. I said, I think it's just that they didn't have the range to execute these themes like they wanted.
Well, see, that's a problem to me because, like, it works in Night of the Living Dead because, like I said, I think it's a combination of luck, but it's also that they didn't have, like, the movie works without it, even if you don't see the social commentary. So it's a good movie regardless. So the social commentary is icing on the cake if you understand the social commentary.
Yep.
So, and it's generational, like generations from now, like another 40 years can pass and Night of Living Dead will still be a good movie to watch, even if hopefully we're not that much further ahead, like in terms of how we treat people than we were in 1968. It's just that, we see people step back into what feels like 1968 all the time politically and just the way people treat each other. So we see, like, we're not so far ahead that it feels that far removed, the social commentary, but I would like to hope that one day it will feel much more, you know, further removed. because like people talk about, for instance, Wizard of Oz having social commentary for its time, and that I'm lost. I don't see it because I'm not that versed in whatever was going on politically. And I mean, I know certain things like pre-World War II and all that stuff, but I'm just saying, like, whatever political stuff's going on with Wizard of Oz, I'd have to just look it up online and take their word for it. Is that it opens up, like you said, at the graveyard, just like Night of the Living Dead. But this time, our first image is of this desiccated corpse that's been like wired up to, I don't know if that was the tombstone that it was wired up to, and it's done almost like a what you'd expect a serial killer to do with a body, just so when someone discovers it, it's gonna create the ultimate, you know, art masterpiece in the serial killer's eyes, but pop art masterpiece with a corpse. But it's going to obviously set up to be disturbing to people. So this weird family that lives out in the middle of nowhere in Texas that is cannibalistic, likes to play with corpses, is just in this really messed up cycle of abuse. And we don't know, just like we don't know about the protagonists in Night of the Living Dead, we don't really know much about these people. We don't know their history. I know maybe some of the other movies tries to do that, but just for all intents and purposes in the original, we are, just like in Night of the Living Dead, we know what it's like to be trapped in a house during a zombie outbreak with people that don't know anything about each other. Well, with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, we're plunged into a similar situation, except we spend a good deal of time with the kids in the van, I guess they're supposed to be college age, in the van, but we get to know them enough, like, for this type of movie. But when they meet up, when they start meeting people that we later find out are in this family, we don't know anything about them. So we get the same feeling that we get, and I've been on trips through the mountains and have met people that I'm not so sure didn't eat people. I'm not trying to be mean or anything. There are a lot of great people in the mountains. I'm just saying, I've been to some places that gave me like shivers. You know what I mean? Like,
No, I know what you feel. What you're feeling, because, my family is from South Carolina, so whenever I watch this movie, it always sort of reminds me of trips as a kid to South Carolina. It's one thing when you spend 12 hours and you're on I-95, but once you get off I-95 and you got to go find your relative's house, and you know, growing up in the 90s, you know, you didn't, when there weren't a lot of either malls or strip malls and even street lights driving around some of these roads, you do get kind of nervous about someone in the someone lurking all around, in some of these. So, like I said, I'm not trying to make anyone think the South is scary or anything like that. I'm just saying, just from just experience growing up,
man, I'm not even kidding you. And I live out in the, like, if you came to my house right now, you'd be like, man, you are out in the country. But I'm thinking, like, we went, and my parents are from the country, my wife's been in the country, like she lived closer to the city when I met her. But I'm just saying, so when we went to the mountains, like, I guess it was a year ago, we took my mom with us. We stopped at this, like, out of the way, like, store, because they needed to use the bathroom, and I didn't even go in because I was fine. They came back out like, we gotta go right now, go. I'm like, what is going on? They're like, no, go get us out of here now. So I'm like, I'm not gonna be that person in the horror movie that's like, well, what's wrong with y'all? Let's just go back and talk to them. You know, like, no, they were like serious, like freaked out. So I like put the van in reverse and got out of there. And going down the road, I'm like, so what's going on? And they were like, that place was weird. Like, you can tell, like, they were like, when you walked in, you could tell that we did not belong there. They did not want us there. We were not supposed, like, it was open to the public, but like, they were like, we were in a town where they don't like outsiders or something. And that was the vibe that they got the whole time they were in there. And the people just stopped talking when they walked in and just stared at them the whole time they were in there. And then they like when they went to the bathroom, when they came out of the bathroom, like they had just entered the freaking Twilight Zone for real. And they just got like they got really weirded out. Like they were gonna, and then like Heather said that when they went into the bathroom, they had like shovels with like fresh dirt on them and like pickaxes and stuff leaning against the wall, like just wild shit. And I was like, well, did they serve barbecue in there? Like, you should have asked if they had fresh barbecue. But I mean, so those places do exist, and what's funny about Texas Chainsaw Massacre is none of it seems really out of the ordinary at first. And I didn't get the sense that these were city kids, you know, like Franklin and Sally's family came from this part of Texas. I don't know, where does it say where it takes place in Texas?
No, it never says.
The only time they mention any towns, I think they do mention like something near Austin, Texas, and I don't remember where Texas Chainsaw technically takes place at, but you know, they're not unfamiliar with, it's not like the movie pokes fun at Texas. It's not like, what's unique about it, if you've never seen it, is it's not about a group of kids coming from the big city and going to Texas for the first time and being killed by Texans. It's not that sort of thing. Like, none of these kids are like city kids. They're just going out. It'd be like me going to out into the really rural parts of like North Carolina, where I'm just not familiar with the lay of the land, and the locals just don't see outsiders very much. And there are places like that in the world, and I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre was one of the first horror films to kind of capture that. There was a thing to do in the 70s, because you had movies like Deliverance and a few others that did, you know, similar things, but the horror movies that were most famous, I feel like, in the pre-70s were like, there were a lot more European, you know, horror films or movies that took place in big cities. You didn't see as much out in the country, you know, like out in that area. So there's something about the fact that it's filmed by Texans, a lot of the actors in it, if not all of them, were from Texas, that they know what they're writing about, with the exception of the cannibalistic family, I would hope. Like, I don't think any of them had any experience with anything like that, but the fact that they're familiar with how weird their surroundings are, and they just embrace that. So everybody that's in the movie knows exactly what kind of movie they're making. And I feel like my first impression, when I rented it from the video store for the first time, because this is one of those movies that I read about in that book that I talked about on our very first episode that had all the descriptions of all the classic horror films, Texas Chainsaw Massacre was one of those. And it mentioned it in the same breath as Last House on the Left, which both came out real close to each other. Like, I can't remember exactly, but I want to say they both came out in 73. So I guess Chainsaw is 74, right?
Yeah.
So Last House on the Left came out in 73. Both movies are similar, but there's a lot of difference in them, because Wes Craven's coming from a completely different perspective than what Tobe Hooper's coming from, and I feel like those movies are fun to watch, and I would have done those together, except I try to make these double features like fun and not oppressive, you know, like, which is why I didn't do Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, because I think that movie has a lot in common with Texas Chainsaw. But I don't want to watch both of those movies at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, I want to mix it up a little bit. But Chainsaw gets its power as much from, there's a scene where they pick up the, I don't want to jump too off track. When I saw it for the first time, it was on a, once again, really bad quality old VHS that had been rented God knows how many times since the 80s when they got the copy. And I still thought, like, it was kind of like The Exorcist. I watched it and I'm like, this isn't the movie everybody told me it was. You know, I was kind of put off by that a little bit, but I thought it is a good movie. Like, there's something really interesting in it. When I finally saw a better copy of it, I really noticed how well shot it was, like how beautiful the cinematography actually is. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre actually has like really good cinema, like beautiful cinematography. There's some shots with this, you know, the way they use sunlight to really make you feel like it's a hot summer day in Texas. Like you could actually see the heat, you know, in the film in certain shots. Like it captures that very well. And it's just, there's some really beautiful angles and neat things that they do. But Tobe Hooper does this cool thing where he'll mix in really disturbing images in there with the more beauty, and never stop. He shoots it with just as much finesse and beauty and interesting camera angles as he does all the pretty stuff. He shoots all the gross, weird stuff in that house with that same level of reverence that he shoots the pretty girl in the shorts, you know, kind of like in the sunset and all this other stuff, you know, like he shoots all the skulls and the severed arms and all the other stuff that's going on and shit that I didn't even pick up on the first couple times I watched the movie, all the weird stuff in that house, like the different body parts and bones that they've used to make things. But what I was getting at was there's a scene where they pick up the weird hitchhike brother, you know, as the hitchhiker, and he starts talking about the slaughterhouse, and it cuts to images of like these cows with like saliva coming out of their mouth. And when they do stuff like that in a movie without explanation, you're seeing the images of something in someone's, like how they're seeing it, and like I always thought that was what Franklin was seeing in his mind in that moment, you know. That and the sounds that they use where they mix, they like the animal sounds or just weird. Oh, Nine Living Dead and Texas Chainsaw used those weird non-traditional music scores with some of which were just like weird sounds, you know, mixed in with the music. And they're both minimalist in that way. They both use a very similar technique with scoring. But a lot of that could come from the budget, but it works. And they both create that atmosphere. But like so many times...
It unnerves you as you hear and see.
Yeah. And there's so many times where like certain conversations... Texas Chainsaw does this really well. Where certain conversations are happening and you're just kind of in the group with them. The way that it's almost documentary-like. Where the conversation kind of fades out and then fades into another conversation, and you already know because we talked a little bit about that last week, how I love that kind of thing in movies. But Texas Chainsaw does that really well, and all the weird little sound effects and like the even Leatherface is squealing, and how much of that final scene where they have Sally at the dinner table. It gets to the point where you want to jump out of a window, and I'm not saying that as a critique. I mean. It's just the laughing and the screaming gets to a point where I feel like this movie is disturbing. Like,
the way it builds to that, you know, to that dinner, and then you have when they cut her finger and have the grandfather sucking the blood from her finger, or when or tell me you don't get the you don't get on the edge of your seat when they have her bent over the bucket and they're trying to have the grandfather bash her head in with the mallet, and he keeps dropping it, and each time Leatherface picks it up and puts it back in his hand and tries to guide his hand to do it, and you just,
because he was apparently the guy who hit, they set that up in the movie too, because they were talking about the slaughterhouse and they said that gun that they use to kill the cattle, that's no good because it puts people out of jobs. And then if you draw that parallel, okay, that's how Grandpa lost his job. He was the guy who killed the cows with the sledgehammer, and when they brought in that air gun, he lost his job. So this is like they're trying to blame their crazy sadistic behavior on economic anxiety.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing people blame their, you know, their sadistic political and other behavior on now, you know, like,
well, see, the thing that always got me was like when he was like, well, they brought in this air gun and, you know, it put people out of work, and I always just saying, I'm like, well, I'm like, well, damn, nobody learned. I was like, doesn't someone have to fire the air gun?
Yeah, but I imagine, like, if you, and I don't know anything about slaughterhouses, but if you are having to sledge cows in the head all day, like, how much of that could you do in a day versus the air gun? Like, maybe you would need more than one sledgehammer operator, you know, whereas you might only need one dude with an air gun killing cows. Like, how much, I mean, how much could I sit there and just shoot cows in the head all day? I probably wouldn't make it through a whole shift, but some of these people could do it all day long. It's more of a physical thing. Like, it would take a lot of force to bust something's skull open with a sledgehammer, and to have to do that all day long. I mean, how, I just imagine you'd have to have more than one person working, whereas you'd only have to pay one dude willing to sit there and shoot that air gun. So, or that, whatever it's called. The thing that, speaking of No Country for Old Men, there you go. That thing. That's what he uses. But yeah, it's really, really disturbing, and it's all mostly just them talking about certain images, because then, well, it sets up two things. It sets up Grandpa, because I do get the sense that that's why he got upset when they started talking about the air gun. And it might not be that. It might not be why Grandpa got laid off. Grandpa might have gotten laid off from the slaughterhouse because Grandpa's a sadistic bastard. You know, we don't know anything about him. I'm imagining he's not any nicer than Leatherface or any of the others. But when Leatherface kills your guy, I don't remember anybody's damn names except Sally. But when the guy gets hit in the head with the slit with the hammer, that's also the imagery that they set up with the cows and what they were talking about, because that's exactly how Leatherface kills him.
Yep.
Let's talk about Grandpa for a second. I did not know. Like, there's a scene. Okay, so this reminded me of Psycho. When Sally runs upstairs and she's at begging for help for the guy, and then she like realizes, oh, okay, this isn't like a person that can help me, and she starts freaking out because Grandma is in the rocking chair beside Grandpa, and Grandma is obviously a corpse.
Yeah.
Did you think the first time you watched it that Grandpa was a corpse too?
That's what I did. Yeah.
And I feel like they want you to think that, because it's something really disturbing later on in the movie when they bring him down and then you realize he's alive.
Well, when I watched it, when I just watched it today before recording, and I saw it, and I had to think for a second. I was like, wait a minute, was there Grandpa and then there were two corpses upstairs or whatever? That's why I had to think for a second.
No, it makes it, because it, like, it's like Norman Bates's mom, you know, how he keeps her corpse, and I feel like that was what they were going for with Grandpa and Grandma. But then the twist on that is, oh wait, no, Grandpa's not a corpse, he's alive, you know, he's barely alive, but he's alive. And that's really disturbing. And yeah, that scene where he's sucking her finger, that shit can go straight to hell. That's one of the most like under your skin disturbing things I've ever seen in a horror film to this day. It's just like, it doesn't matter. Like, I can see, you know, people getting hacked up all day long in a horror film, but you do some crap like that, and there's two movies that come to mind of people sucking someone's finger, and it just disturbs me. And it's more graphic in Texas Chainsaw because they cut her finger open, but like, there's a scene in Scorsese's remake of Cape Fear where, like, I don't remember who initiates it. Well, I mean, obviously he's like going after Juliet Lewis just to get at her dad, but like, somehow or another his thumb ends up in her mouth and she sucks his thumb, and it's like the grossest, most uncomfortable thing I've ever seen in a film. So I mean, to me, that kind of stuff is more horrific than any gore you put on screen. But yeah, that's gross. And yeah, when they have her over the bucket, like, you think she's toast, and the scene goes on for so long, and not in a bad way. Like, it goes on that long and it's just horrific. And then when she finally breaks free and jumps through the window, it doesn't, you think, okay, she's going to get away. But then Leatherface immediately bursts out the door behind her with a chainsaw. Once again, I can't think of something. I mean, this influenced so much more than just movies, man. Around here, I can't tell you. I can still hear. I mean, like, it's kind of funny because there used to be a haunted corn maze type thing they used to do out like down the road from me. So all October long, you'd hear chainsaws revving and people screaming. Like all, if I was out in my yard, and it just brought so much holiday spirit to my heart to hear. But I mean, that
was. I just love the idea. I just sit there thinking of just like you know you're cooking dinner, you got your window open, you got the fall breeze going in, and you just hear chainsaws revving.
I'm not screaming.
It just feel like oh man, these are the times.
Oh my god,
these
goodness.
Are the times.
It influenced so much because you wouldn't have had all those haunted houses and haunted trails. Like, did you ever go through any of those? Do you guys have those?
When I was little, when I was in school, my school, because I went to a Catholic school, was so funny. I went to a Catholic school, but they always took us to, I guess they were progressive in this instance, but they always took us to the farm, to this farm, Marymead Farm, and they used to have a haunted maze or something like that, and
did they fun. Have, did they have the chainsaws going?
No chainsaws or anything. But.
Oh no, there's not a haunted trail. I mean, I live, you know, in the South, man. There's not a haunted trail or a haunted house at Halloween that doesn't have somebody with a damn chainsaw or multiple. they take the blades off the bars, but I don't care. When somebody comes at you revving a damn chainsaw in the dark, I mean, it's scary. It's actually like scary.
And, see, I could do something like that because it would be, I know it's an act, but I'd end up unfortunately probably hitting somebody.
Yeah. So get this. My dad, like they used to actually would put like, could touch you at these places. Nowadays you don't do it because you don't want to get sued. But like my dad and mom went to one when they were teenagers, and my mom lost her shoe. And so dad, they stopped running so he could find her shoe. And the guy came running up to them and like put the chainsaw to my mom's leg, but it didn't have a, you know, it's a real chainsaw, but it doesn't have the blade. Like if you've ever used it or seen a chainsaw, the blade is kind of loose. Like it can't be super tight to the bar. Like you have to be able to kind of pull it down. Like it's hard to explain, but it has to stay oiled and it has to stay kind of loose on the bar, and it just basically, when you rev it, it's inside the body of the chainsaw itself, it's got this little like pinwheel, and it hooks the chain, and it like, you know, rolls and like keeps the chain rotating so it cuts. Well, you can take that chain off, so all you have is the engine and the bar itself. But he put that bar to my mom's leg, and my dad punched the dude in the face because he was just trying to find her shoe, you know. So anyway, long story short, yes, my dad did exactly what you just said. He punched the dude. But fast forward years later, when my dad worked at was with the fire department, we were doing a fundraiser for the fire department, and we did a haunted house, and they had this old schoolhouse that the city let us use, that was, it was an actual old schoolhouse, and we set it up like we had all these rooms set up, and each person got to pick the theme of their room, so that as people paid to come through, they would have like different, you know, each room was different with different things coming at them. So we got, me and some friends got to do our own room, but one of the last rooms, there were two rooms at the end. One of them was my dad's room, where he was dressed like Alice Cooper. And he was basically Alice Cooper doing his act. And then behind him was like a coffin that was set up, and it was like a real casket or whatever. And it opens up and Michael Myers steps out, and my dad pulls out like a starter pistol that's capped off at the end. So, and fires six shots into Michael, and he's like, get out. You know, it's stupid. It was funny though. People loved it. And they would, and Michael Myers every single time, because Michael Myers would come out behind the crowd and they were all focused on my dad, that they would turn around and see Michael. And one woman actually pissed herself. So,
wow. Like,
literally pissed herself. And so, and people paid money for this. So after they exited that room, the last room they went into was Leatherface. And this guy who played Leatherface was big, like Gunnar Hansen. He looked like Gunnar Hansen Leatherface. Like, it was pretty incredible. And he had the butcher's apron and the blood all over the butcher's apron and had the chainsaw and he's like cutting up meat and it was like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And this was the final room because you herded everybody in there like cattle and have them stand there and you have Pusher in the back that keeps people from being able to back go back out. Like they won't let anybody leave that room back the way they came. So they can only go forward through the house. And so Leatherface notices people standing there, revs the chainsaw and runs at them. And then they basically hit set up in a way that he can't get to them right away. So they get everybody to leave the room. And the last thing they got to do is exit out the building. And before they get out the building, there's actually like a real, like really wide wooden, like polished, like bowling alley polished slide that they have to go down and it leads them out of the house. And so they like one by one are going down the slide and leather and the chainsaws revving. And then at the very end, they're out and they think they're safe. Leatherface comes down and exits the house with the chainsaw and chases them all the way to their car. It's freaking great. So this was what we did for like a couple of years. We ran this thing and we were, and people thought it was the like most fun. They would always come back up and hang out with us afterwards. Cause we would take breaks between crowds and we would let people come back up and like we had like food for sale, like, you know, and everything. They could buy hot dogs like at a baseball game or something. So they're like getting chased by Leatherface and they go buy meat. But so we're all, everybody would come up and be like, that was the most fun, you know, like hanging out with us all and joking around. And like, they're like, this was the most fun haunted house we've ever been to. And they would come back with friends the next night. Like we made like a ton of money for the fire department. It was great. That would have never happened without Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So the legacy continues. Cause I know there's other places that do that stuff, you know? So it's just, it goes beyond just movies. It's just super cool. But anyway, that was my experience with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We actually got to see people's terror of running from people with chainsaws firsthand. It was pretty cool. But yeah, like some people would really get into it, so they would run around their car and if somebody got too upset, like it was obvious they weren't having fun with it, he would back off. But if people were enjoying it, he would just keep chasing them through the parking lot. It was hilarious. Yeah. Lots of good times with the whole chainsaw thing. But yeah, so I always loved it. And I think they sold that. Those people sold the property. So I don't know if the haunted maze will continue this year. I don't know if I'll hear the screams and the chainsaws in October. The pandemic messed it up a couple of years ago. So I hope it's not gone forever. That was fun. Yeah, normally I would be very weirded out by that. But I knew it was just in good fun and for Halloween. And nobody, to my knowledge, has ever been cut up by a chainsaw around here. But I knew a guy who... I know a guy who threw a skill saw at someone and it buried in their head, but it wasn't... And they didn't die or anything, but yeah, that was a...
Well, like when that dude threw the wrench at Leatherface at the end?
Yeah, that is awesome, too. Like, that scene always gets me because he comes out of the truck to help Sally, and then here comes Leatherface around with the chainsaw. He immediately goes running back into the truck. and my reaction would have been, let's get this truck down the road. But
that's what actually... I thought. I was like, no, they go out the other door.
Yeah, and Leatherface is, like, trying to, you know, cut through the door like a moron. And I'm thinking, like, why did he get back? I know he's trying to help this woman that he's never met that's covered in blood that just jumped in his truck, but, like, why in the world didn't he just get out of there? But I was glad that Leatherface didn't kill him. That was...
Yeah, because that's usually the case. Usually there's some innocent bystander that ends up getting killed, and he didn't... when the pickup truck guy comes along and grabs out, he just kept running.
I love that shot of him like looking back, like, what the fuck is happening? Well, I think Texas has, you know, it's a different ending. It's a different ending than like Night of the Living Dead. Like Night of the Living Dead kind of leaves me feeling cold. I think the ending to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the movie for the most part, it feels hopeless. Like it feels like there's no way Sally's gonna get out of this, and you're essentially watching the beginnings of a torture porn, you know, in a way. With the whole table scene, that's what it kind of starts feeling like. It just goes on and on and on, and it's so oppressive. and then they start beating her head over the thing, and you're like, this is just horrible. And when she jumps out the window, it gives us one of the great, and like the chase through the woods earlier in the film too with Sally. So she has two chase scenes. The one in the woods, there's so many things that we skipped over. Her getting captured by the guy in the convenience store, or whatever that was. Yeah, I guess it's a convenience store. Like, that whole section of the film is brilliant. The way it's shot, the way, even when he gets her in the sack and he sticks her in the truck, how he, like, gets in the truck and then he's like, oh, shit, forgot to lock the door. He gets out of the truck. Like, the way the camera just holds on that. Like, there's so many amazing moments in the film that it's not the ugly, low-budget, badly shot or badly acted horror film that you'd almost expect a movie like that to be. It's beautifully shot, but still has enough of the production quality of a porno film to be disturbing, if that makes sense. And I love Last House on the Left for what it does, but it feels more amateurish than Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I was actually just about to bring that up. I think what's interesting is, and we know Last House on the Left certainly had its reputation. I think I sometimes think that the reputation that people say that Texas Chainsaw has, I think Last House on the Left actually probably deserved that a little bit more, because I think, like you said, there's enough sort of big budget spirit, at least in the editing of Texas Chainsaw, that you can be like, yeah, this is not only horrifying, but it is entertaining. Whereas, you know, we will get to Last House on the Left, but Last House on the Left is very, very exploitative, and I don't think Texas Chainsaw really ever is.
I don't think exploitative. So I think it pulls back when it really has more of a sense of fun to it. And that, I say that like kind of laugh about it, but it's a legit horror film, and it knows what it's doing. Like, the humor doesn't come. The humor in it works very well because it's also disturbing. Like, it never stops being disturbing. But there's something about Last House on the Left that works for me, even though it is low budget and even though it does come across as a bit amateurish at times, because of the way it treats the violence and the fact that it's not trying to have fun at all. Whereas I feel like Texas Chainsaw is trying to have fun, and I think it accomplishes it. Like, it's just enough removed from real life violence that you can have fun with it as a horror film. Whereas Last House on the Left is like, it's shot and filmed by somebody who's not as familiar with filmmaking. Like, Wes Craven wasn't as familiar with the medium as he became, and perhaps as much as Tobe Hooper was. So I think that, whereas I think Tobe Hooper knew exactly what type of movie he was wanting to make, Wes Craven just wanted to film something angry. He was wanting to say something about Vietnam and how he was feeling about the world and how people kind of treated violence in media at the time. And he was like saying his movies, like The Last House on the Left, is intentionally a much uglier and fucked up experience than even Texas Chainsaw Massacre is. But I think, like you said, audiences at the time weren't always able to discern that. But you can look back on it historically and you can kind of see, like, Texas Chainsaw is a legit film. Like, it's not amateur hour by any means. Like, it's actually a really well shot film, and that's not taken away from Last House on the Left. I think it's just going for a different thing, totally going for a different thing. And it's coming from the perspective of somebody who wasn't really experienced in the medium yet. And maybe that was necessary for a movie like that. Don't get me wrong, but I think Texas, you actually have people that are skilled. And I think that even the actors are pretty good for what they got. I mean, it has the same, like, compared to other slasher movies that came after, because Texas Chainsaw was the first movie that, to my knowledge, that had the final girl and the basic structure of what we came to kind of know the slasher genre to have. Even though we're still about 4 years away from Halloween at this point, but you can even see a little bit of influence on Halloween, like the way the characters have just kind of everyday conversations. Like none of the stuff they're talking about at first seems like stuff you wouldn't hear young people just in a normal. I mean, what I'm saying is like the conversation didn't feel like a movie conversation. It felt like they were just having a normal conversation. They weren't trying to have super clever dialogue. Like now you'd never have characters just talking like that in a movie. Now you'd have them being super clever about something, you know, like none of the conversations in movies now feel like they have no point. In other words, like most of what you're talking about on a road trip with your friends is bullshit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you're just like cracking each other up and talking, but you don't, like, there's no form to the conversation. Kind of like when I'm rambling on this podcast, there's no form to it. They're not reading from a script. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they're ad-libbing it, but it works in the movie. Like Halloween, Deborah Hill went in there and wrote a lot of that dialogue of Laurie talking to her friends, walking down the street. And it just sounds like teenage girls talking about shit teenage girls would talk about in 1978. And I feel like this just sounds like shit these kids would be talking about in a van driving through Texas in 1974.
Yeah, that's why I really noticed this time. I really noticed how Hooper really, you had mentioned earlier, that it felt that it's almost documentary like, and I forget to mention, of course, it opens up with that great narration by John Larroquette.
Oh, yeah.
Setting the stage and setting the atmosphere, and that was Hooper attempt to sell the audience on the idea that these were real events that occurred. And that was the whole time I was just that, like the whole time when I'm watching with the camera work, and I'm like, yeah, this whole thing does seem like it's like some cheap documentary that was just following a bunch of kids around that this stuff happened to. So
like a student film or something.
Yeah,
it's almost creating, and I thought this was what you were going to say, so I didn't want to step on what you were saying. It's sort of almost creating the found footage genre.
I can see
it's
that.
It's like laying the groundwork. And I'll say, think about the scene where Franklin and Sally are going through the woods, and the way that shot, it's very much like the Blair Witch Project. And it's genuinely terrifying. Like that scene is scary. Like when Leatherface just pops up out of nowhere and kills Franklin, like that to me, that jump scare, it still works. Like it actually affects me. Not just, it doesn't make me jump. It just kind of like, oh God, you know, like, you know, I actually have a reaction to it every time I watch it, even though I know that's coming. It's just effective. It's once again the way it's edited. But that, this time around, going off of what you just said, I was like, well, this is really laying the tracks, because that's the kind of scares you have to do in a found footage film. You can't do some of the, there are certain tricks you can't do in a found footage film for it to work. And I feel like Texas Chainsaw actually did that in a really interesting way. Another film that we'll watch eventually, because it's really, really good, and takes place in Texas, strangely enough, that actually dives headfirst into the found footage, and it was made a couple years after Texas Chainsaw, is the Town That Dreaded Sundown. If you watch that movie, they basically took what Texas Chainsaw did and said, okay, we'll actually lean hard into that found footage / documentary style, you know, and I think that they do a pretty good job with that too. But yeah, I mean, I was watching those scenes, especially in the woods. And I was thinking, and her running from Leatherface after Franklin dies and getting wrapped up in the tree branches. I mean, there is something there foundational going, like it's almost like Texas Chainsaw is creating more multiple genres at one time. Like, or at least you can just see how it's inspiring things. Like looking back through history and film history, or horror film history, I should like minimize that statement a little bit. You can see it having influence over things that came later. And I don't think it gets, I mean, it gets a lot of credit from the horror people, but I don't think it necessarily gets enough credit for that, because I can't think of that many other examples before it that was doing what it's doing.
Nope, I can't think of any either.
I mean, you have a film that was funded by the mafia. That's what you have with Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And what they were used to funding, which, I mean, I'm sure it's not the only film, especially in the exploitation genre. Even though I agree with you that it transcends and isn't really like, it's not nearly exploitative as other exploitation films. It still played very strongly at drive-ins and grindhouses and places where exploitation, because that was the distribution route for a movie like this. And it's being funded by some of the money, at least, is coming from the actual mob. It's coming from a mobster. Basically, it's like if somebody's son or an associate of a mob family just had some extra money to invest in something, and instead of investing in, you know, something illicit, they said, okay, well, hell, let's give this money to these kids in Texas and let them do something with it and we'll make profits. And so doing that, they were able to hide, like, to this day, nobody knows exactly how much money was spent on the movie, and nobody knows exactly how much money the movie made, but they know they made money off of it, if that makes sense. Which, these practices with money are the same things the big studios do. That's how they're able to hide the fact that movies are profitable. They'll have all, like, I'm talking like the biggest movie in the world, and they'll somehow make it look like on the books that it was not profitable. And we know that that's bullshit. But with Texas Chainsaw, these are the same people that fund porno at the time, like porno movies like Deep Throat and these other movies that were big in the 70s. That when porno movies started, like, you remember that line in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where she's like, I didn't know they had premieres for the dirty movies or for the adult movies, you know, when Sharon Tate says that. Well, this was during that time where they started having premieres, like, for, like, there was even a thought that, well, porno movies could be legit, like, they could be on the same level as, like, they could have the same production values and make the same kind of artistic statements that regular films make. But that was kind of just an era that went away pretty quick. But the mob was putting a lot of money into pornographic movies. So it's not that hard to understand that they would put money into something like this. And ultimately, Tobe Hooper just wanted to make a movie. I don't think he necessarily cared where the money came from. So, and I don't know how much he knew, or I don't know how that whole thing happened. But this movie got treated like a porno film. Texas Chainsaw Massacre was released to certain theaters. It got pulled from certain theaters. Certain people went to see it and walked out of it. You know, like, and some of that just happens with every horror film, especially in this era, because it was just something people weren't ready for. But I think one of the actors for years was ashamed of it, because, like, the general consensus from the non-horror fans where it was that it was a porno film. You know, that was just the way they treated it. And it wasn't until the VHS era I guess Betamax era, I don't know if it ever made it to Betamax, but it wasn't until that era, the home video market, the video rental stores, that the film found the audience that it has now, if that makes sense. Like, I'm sure in the drive, like, it had its audience with horror fans that went to the drive-ins and saw it that way. You and I are coming from a younger generation that discovered these movies, because if it had been the people that were in power of film distribution of the day, this movie might have been buried forever, you know what I mean? But I watched the movie now, like you said, and I'm shocked that people reacted that way to it, because it's a really well-made movie, and it's not nearly it doesn't have the rape scenes that you typically get with movies like this, because what other movies would you categorize similar to Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Like, I Spit on Your Grave and Last House on the Left and stuff like that. Even The Hills Have Eyes, which is probably the more similar movie to content, it still has a rape scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't have any of that. And it and it doesn't even have any nudity in it. I mean, Sally's not wearing a bra, but that was just the thing in the, like, that time. Like, that just seems like a, you know, a woman from 1974 to me.
That was actually one of the things that I was always surprised. Like, the first time I saw it, I just figured, I was like, okay, yeah, this was the 70s. I was like, there's going to be some a topless woman in here at some point. And it never is.
You think it's going to, because we've been trained by Friday the 13th and all the stuff that came after, but you think it's going to happen when they go for the swim. And when they get down there, they're like, oh, the pond's dry, you know? So that, like, okay, well, they're going to go off and have sex or whatever, and then that never happens. So it's funny that the movie could have gone that route, like, several times, and it chooses not to. It's focused. It knows, okay, it wants to hit the... And also, those tropes weren't... I think it's easy to forget that those tropes didn't exist yet. Like, the things you had to do in a slasher movie didn't necessarily exist yet. So, maybe if Texas Chainsaw had come out in 1982, it might have had those moments that we would come to expect, but that really hadn't happened yet. But Last House on the Left has, you know, brutal rape, like, especially if you see the non-censored version, because there's a couple different versions of that movie that tame it down a bit, but it's still, like, I had the R-rated cut on VHS because that was the only one that was available for a long time, and even that version is just so much more disgusting than Texas Chainsaw. The way the death is treated in Last House on the Left to me is much more final and disturbing. Yeah. But I think that's what Wes Craven was trying to say, like, hey, these acts are like this is how violence is, and this is, you know. But there's scenes where they're in the uncut version of Last House where they're pulling out the girl's guts, like a shot of them actually gutting her, you know. And I mean, like, none of that kind of stuff exists in Texas Chainsaw. Like, none of that. I mean, like, there's no, like, Last House has a woman giving a dude a blowjob and biting his dick off. Like, that, none of that kind of stuff happens in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So yeah, it's crazy to me, but yeah, it was very controversial when it came out, and people still used it as a, maybe because it was more famous of a title, but people still used it as a one of those banned movie titles that you can't possibly, you know, let people watch this or let your kids watch this.
Sorry,
I took it there.
No. No, I just remember when I finally rented it myself and was just like, okay, yes, this is, I love it because it is so, just the atmosphere of it is so horrifying. But I agree that when I did sit and watch it, I was like, well, yeah, this isn't, like, honestly, I was expecting that this, like, the way they made it sound, I was expecting to see the limbs flying and guts flying all over the place. And yeah, when that never happened, I was like, no, this is just a very, very well-made horror movie. I can understand why it would unsettle people, because it is definitely great at conveying that unsettling and disturbing setting. But it, I was just like, wow, yeah, no, this is not what they, you know, what people claim it was. Like I said, I thought that this was like the earliest example of like limbs flying all over the place, blood all over. I thought this was going to be like a Saw movie, like you say, kind of like the a torture porn feature.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are other movies, especially like in Japanese and Italian cinema that are during this time that are much more graphic than what's going on in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So it's just, it's interesting to me that the reputation that it has. And I would be curious on how much, like, I've never really studied it. I would be curious to know how much of the reputation transcends the USA. Like, how much of that, like, I wanted to have Stuart said he might send in his thoughts on, because he wanted to talk about these movies with us, but he couldn't make it for the show today. But how much of that I mean, I know the Brits were especially hard on slasher movies and horror movies with the whole video nasties thing. But how much did foreign audiences respond to this movie? Like, I think that I kind of forget that a lot of horror films especially became famous in a much more limited distribution avenue. Like, they had much more limited, they weren't widely released. Like I'm trying to think of like the God. Okay. Well, The Godfather 2 came out in 1974. That movie would have been available in everywhere pretty much. You know, you could go to a theater to see it, whereas Texas Chainsaw wasn't going to be playing everywhere. I mean, I seriously, like, except for drive-ins and places like that would play movies like this. So if I were a teenager in 1974 to see Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I know for a fact it probably wouldn't have played at my local. Are you still there?
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, the same drive-in we have now would have been the same drive. That was the same one we had back then in the 70s. So, maybe they played it. They don't have records of that sort of thing. See, I want to have records of what movies they played because it would be so cool to go back and see. But yeah, I mean, these movies became popular almost because they weren't widely available. Would they have achieved the same word of mouth popularity or the same stigma? In some ways, I think the stigma actually kept them in public consciousness. The people that treated them like they were pornographic and like they were horrible are probably the people that, if they had just left them alone, maybe would some of these movies would have been forgotten to time. You know, I'd be kind of curious to, I mean, I'm glad that they weren't because I love these movies, but I'm just saying, I feel like it's the same way with music. As soon as they started slapping parental advisory stickers on CDs, we knew exactly which ones we wanted to buy. You know, like this is the music that's not commercially viable. Like, this is the music that actually has something to say, whether it's mature or not doesn't matter. It is like, this is the stuff that they don't want you to hear, so of course I want to hear it, you know. And I think horror films always had that kind of appeal as well, and now they've gone much more mainstream, but I still think like the shit I see on TV is worse than the stuff I see in most movies now, like especially cable. Like cable shows do way more with sex and violence than movies, you know. It's and it does it almost like on a weekly basis, you know.
Yes, it's yeah, it's definitely, like I said, it's, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the last time I watched the first Friday the 13th, and I had watched it with commentary, and had Sean S. Cunningham on there, and it was funny because he was actually talking about how, like, when Friday the 13th came out, and I guess this is just the history of the horror movie in general, like, you know, how when Friday the 13th came out, he was getting like lambasted all over for contributing to the downfall of society with this horrendous this horrendous film of violence, and he said he was just like well, what did I do? You know, if you for any of my fans out there who watch The Wire, if you're fans of that show, it almost sounded like Jimmy McNulty to going, "The fuck did I do?"
Right.
That's what I imagine Toby Hooper being like when he's getting raked over the coals for this.
Well, I think so too, because Toby was always like, "I was making a funny movie. Like, it was supposed to be a horror comedy," and like everybody else, this like hears Toby Hooper say that, it's like, "What? Like, what? Have you watched your own movie, dude?" Like, but then you see like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and you kind of start seeing what he was going for, and then I kind of wonder, well, how much of other influences kind of kept him from being able to do it as funny as maybe he wanted to go? Because Texas Chainsaw 2, the first time I saw it, which we might watch it eventually, I went because I loved the first Texas Chainsaw so much that I wanted to see the second one. As soon as I found out that it had Dennis Hopper in it, I was 100% in. And I went and bought it on DVD for like $30. I kid you not, like, because it was a rare movie. It was hard to find around here. And this was before I bought anything online very often. Like, every now and then I'd buy something online. But I, you know, like, I got paid. I got a check from my job back then, my first job. And I got paid once a month. And I would go and cash that check. And so I carried cash. So I didn't buy online that often, even though I had a debit card. I would just go to the store. There was a Sam Goody near me, and I would go in there, and that's where I bought a lot of movies. And I had a membership, so I'd get points, and I'd get free movies and stuff like that. Long story short, they had a copy of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and I thought, okay, so I think it's going to be like the first one, which I love, and it's Tobe Hooper again, which I had, like, become sort of a fan of, because I like, I mean, I love Tobe Hooper now, but at the time I hadn't seen that many of his movies, but I was aware of him, you know? So I'm like, okay, cool. This is the director of the first movie. I'm thinking Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 will be a continuation of the first movie. And then I put it in. And even the trailer, by the way, the trailer for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is kick ass. Like, I love that. Actually, all the Chainsaw Massacre movies, just about, especially in the first three or so, have really great trailers. But the trailer for the second one had me all hyped, so I put it in and I watched it. And the movie is kooky and just weird, and now I think it's funny. Like, now I enjoy it, but I was really put off by it the first time I saw it, because it's nothing like the first movie, and it's not even really trying to be a continuation of the first movie. Like, it feels like I'm like, who are these characters? Like, what is going on? Like, who is chopped up, you know? Like, who is he supposed to be? Like, I never completely understood what Hooper was going for, but now I think it was just him going for that vibe that maybe he had originally set out to do the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and maybe he didn't achieve what he, because in his mind he was going to make a horror comedy, and it didn't turn out that way, but it still turned out to be something super amazing. So I mean, I set out with my first short film with the intention of doing a dark comedy, and I was wanting to go for something like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Very Bad Things, but just the type of humor in that movie is like really dark and disturbing, but it's funny to me. It was funny to me, and I wasn't trying to do that story. I was just trying to do something with that kind of sense of humor, and my short film turned out to not be funny at all either. It's not easy to make a funny movie out of something really dark. Sometimes it just comes across sadistic. So when I screened it with people, and I got to screen it a couple times with like rooms full of people, there was one screening where one guy in the audience laughed at all the things that I thought were funny in the movie, like, to me, that were supposed to be jokes. I got to see it with one person that laughed, and multiple, like, laughed all the way through the movie, like, at the stuff that he was supposed to laugh at, and nobody else was laughing.
So they're all looking at him probably like, what the hell, like, right, are you laughing at?
And I'm like, I think, like, that's, just, and granted, completely different scale and quality of films. Like, I think maybe that's what Tobe felt with Texas Chainsaw. So then he amped up those qualities into, you know, it's so like, now people will know what I was trying to say, you know? Like, and now when I watch Texas Chainsaw 2, I'm like, okay, this is fun, you know? I just have to be in the mood for it. But it is a tonally different film. And yeah, so and by the way, I was so totally horrified by that screening, and I didn't want to, like, be the public face of anything. Like, I was so introverted and not wanting to be social about the whole situation that, like, I should have gone up to that guy and thank him, because he seemed to genuinely enjoy this thing I made. Like, he really enjoyed himself. And I thought, well, here's this guy that totally got exactly what I wanted. He got what I was trying to put out there. And he's, like, the only one on that wavelength. And I didn't even go off and talk to him afterwards. But yeah, I mean, I was just like, making a movie and actually showing it to a room full of people is a horrifying thing for me, like, to do, even a short film that means nothing, just a room full of like 150 people or whatever. It's scary because you're putting something out there. It's like, I don't even like writing things and having people read them when I'm in the room, you know what I mean? Like, So for me, like doing that, but it is kind of cool that somebody got it. You know what I mean? Somebody got what I wanted. So I do appreciate that Hooper was going for a comedy, but I don't think Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1's a comedy. Like, no. I'm not. I mean, there's, what's the funniest thing in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1 to you?
Probably just when Franklin
rolls down the hill.
No, not necessarily when he rolls down the hill, but when he's like, "Oh, come on, y'all said this was gonna be a fun trip," and he just keeps going. I think that's about it.
Stanley. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, the scene where she's like, "Franklin, give me the flashlight." But Sally, I don't even remember what he said. He's like, I'm gonna keep hold of this flashlight, and she's like, well, and she's like, give me the flashlight, Franklin. And they start fighting over it, like my kids would do, like children, like little children would do, and like they feel like very much like real brother and sister in that moment. And then when she finally just like almost falls backwards, she's like, fine, I'll just walk off without it. She's gonna leave him there, and he's like, wait, Sally, wait. And then he gets killed. But yeah, like that whole exchange is funny to me.
I would imagine that he probably meant the dinner scene to be funny. I could see him probably trying to want that to be funny, but that just comes across as horrifying.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, that. Yeah, because I mean, like Sally screaming the whole time, and just the overall madness of it. Like, I can't find that funny. Like, it's. I mean, yeah. I mean, Grandpa, like John watched this movie with. He told me the story off air, but because he couldn't, he had told me this before. I think he said it on Wax and Cinematic before when it came up. But he watched this movie with a woman on their first date. I think he might have even said something about this last week when we said we were going to do this movie. But he watched it with this woman on a first date. And I don't know that either one of them knew what they were watching. I don't think he, like, did it, like, on an unsuspecting victim kind of a thing. Like, we're going to watch a movie here, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But, like, maybe they both wanted to watch it. But the point is, they watched it and yeah, that was the first and last date with this movie. Because, I mean, even now, I feel like that would happen. Like, if you just put something like this on, unless the person you were with just really loved horror movies, you know, and it was something that they could handle. But yeah, no, that scene's not funny. There's a few like moments that are like, I think the dialogue comes across, you know, pretty realistic. But there's a couple moments that are like, I think it's funny that the guy driving the van looks like Disco Stu. He actually. He looks like he's like all the other kids look like they're 38. This, I mean, looks like they're college age. He looks like he's my age. He looks like he's 38 years old. He doesn't look at all like a college age kid, but maybe he smokes or something. I don't know. But yeah, fun movie. I would fun movie. I think it is a fun movie, but I mean, definitely a hardcore horror film at the same time. Like it gets under your skin with the sound design and the editing and the atmosphere, just like Night of Living Dead, in a way that as much as I do appreciate that guy who did the 2003 Texas Chainsaw also did the Friday the 13th remake. He did two really solid remakes, in my opinion. Marcus Nespel, I think is his name, a French yep. director. He's, I don't know that I've ever seen anything else by him except those two movies, but I really do like what he did with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but it's a different atmosphere. I think that it has moments where that remind me of the original, but it's a little too slick in the way that the original was really well shot, but it wasn't slick. It had that kind of layer of found footage reality, you know, that people weren't used to at the time and still really, you know, don't get with very, I can't think of many examples. I mean, there are a lot of movies like Tourist Trap, a lot of Rob Zombie's aesthetic. A lot of that's all. Tourist Trap's another one that came out in the 70s, but came out like several years after Texas Chainsaw. But there are a lot of movies that were inspired by what Tobe Hooper did and what Romero did, for that matter, if you want to just tie it all up together. But very few movies ever accomplish, like, create. There aren't that many examples of movies that you could say, oh, created a genre. And I think, in a way, well, you know, Night of the Living Dead created a whole genre, a whole subgenre. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre, in its own way, kind of did too. Like, there, it's, you got Psycho, you have Night of the Living Dead, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Halloween. Like, there are very few films that you could, like, definitely a lot of movies that inspired all of those, but those, like, something, okay, here's a change. And I think that's, I think that's really awesome. I mean, that sounds as like the stupidest way I could end this podcast. That was really awesome. But yeah, I mean, it's super cool to go back and try to see and piece it all together. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's one of your favorites. I thought that was so cool when I first said that, because I was like, it's rare that you get someone our age that'll cite the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre as like one of their favorites that they watch every year. I feel like there aren't, I mean, I know there are other people that love the movie, but I thought that was super cool, especially if somebody who wasn't like, I mean, you appreciate horror movies and love horror movies now, but you weren't like a hardcore horror person the first time you saw Texas Chainsaw, and it left an impression on you.
Yep, exactly. I said it was, you know, my growth of horror as of knowing horror more honestly has come from knowing you and talking with you. But yes, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and as much as you'll see me on Twitter, you know, talking about Alfred Hitchcock and how much I love his work, and I love Psycho a lot, but Texas Chainsaw is just that's my favorite, because I think that is the movie that every second of it to me is horror. It's something that I believe could happen to me, and therefore it's terrifying when I think of it.
I think it is. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a legitimately scary movie. I know what else would have been funny if you're a sadistic bastard is the guy in the store when he gets Sally and he's like driving to the house and he's like poking her with the stick for no reason, you know, like that's kind of funny if you're sadistic, but because it's just so weird. But just the weirdness of him going, of being like, I never really had much of stomach for killing or something like that, you know. I mean, sometimes you just gotta do it, but you don't have to like it, you know. I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like that. Like that. Once again, it's kind of funny, but like it's super disturbing too, because he's basically saying, yeah, I take part in butchering, you know, people that find their way, outsiders that find their way out here, and I serve them, you know, at my gas station to people unknowingly eating, you know, human beings, but I don't have to enjoy the actual killing part, you know. And there are people that, I guess we're all in, social commentary. We're all like that. We all like to eat the meat from the supermarket. We just don't want to take part in butchering the meat. No, I don't think that's what they're trying to say, but it's kind of funny. But I did enjoy talking with you about it, man. And next week, I don't even remember what the next movies are, but there aren't going to be very many more movies that I think, like, on our list, even though we love them, there aren't going to be that many more movies that you could say changed the game the way these two did. So this was a fun double feature for me.
Oh, yeah. Same here.
And I will talk to you, I guess, next. You know what? Well, I'll cut this part out, but we may have to take a break next week.
Oh, okay.
for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got so much shit to do.
Hell yeah, y'all gonna be put up like that that Simpsons episode where they had to move out and they was like in that old timey home or something, like the reality show. And y'all gonna have have confession rooms and all of that.
I was hoping we could get a houseboat and like when they were running from Sacha Bob.
Oh, the Cape Fear.
Yeah. They lived on the houseboat for a little bit. It was the they changed their name too.
It was like the witness protection or whatever. It was like now when I say your name is Homer Johnson and step on your foot, you say okay.
Yeah.
I think he's talking to you.
We're gonna have to watch Cape Fear because I still haven't. That's one where I've never seen the original.
I've seen the original and Scorsese's. It's been a while since I've seen. I love Scorsese's when I saw it. I guess because it's Scorsese, De Niro plays it far more sadistic.
He's evil as hell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like. Really, like, even the scene at the end, like, I just remember, and that's been a long time since I watched it, but the scene at the end where he's like, I mean, it's, I think the original, from what I understand, is like more of a suspense thriller.
Yeah.
Whereas the Scorsese one is definitely a horror film, in my opinion. Like, and I consider suspense thrillers horror films too, don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying, like, that whole thing with De Niro. He's brutal as hell in that movie. And the ending where he's like speaking in tongues or whatever right before he dies or whatever the hell's going on. That's some scary shit. That disturbs me. Yeah, we're going to have to watch. That would be fun, though. What I was going to say was it would be fun to pair the original with that one and then watch the Cape Fear Simpsons episode as well. And just talk
about it. We got to have a whole Treehouse of Horror episode.
Oh, yeah. We'll do that for our Halloween special for sure. Yeah. That'll be fun. Because I love those. But all right, man. Well, it's been good talking to you. I'll take a look at the list if you have any suggestions on what you'd like to do next. We can always switch up the order. It doesn't matter to me. But yeah, I might have to split. What I might do so we don't have a week with no episodes is just split this in two and just do the Night of the Living Dead hour this week.
Got it.
Or the Texas Chainsaw hour, doesn't matter. And then the other one next week. And I need a week off just so I can take care of stuff. But that way we don't have a gap where we can at least be promoting, you know, a new episode next week.
Yeah.
And that gives us both a week off. And if you ever need a week off or something, we can do the same thing, man. Just let me know. But yeah, I got so much going on. I have no idea what I'll be doing. So I don't want to like leave you on the hook or have you watch movies and then not discuss them.
Shoot. Life is life. So shoot.
Well, that's the cool thing about doing two at a time is we can always do something like that if one of us needs a week off.
Yeah, it is convenient.
That'll work. All right, dude. Well, I'll talk to you later on, and I appreciate it. And
all right, you have a good night.
You too. Have a good rest of your week.
You too.
Later.
Podcast Ask Us Many Questions. Who will listen and who will return next week? Who will take the time to rate and review? Check for a new episode of Photo Flow every week. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Photo Flow Terror and Instagram on PhotoFlow_Terror. Thank you for listening to Photo Flow. We'll find the terror in the smiles.